I'm Jeannie.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Nikki from Tyrion's Landing,
a podcast member of the Gonna Geek Network,
just like the one you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of each individual.
Check out all the other podcasts at GonnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in...
3, 2, 1.
Captain's Log. Stardate, episode number 137 of Better Podcasting. On today's show, we shake down all the players for your podcast.
In this week's Better Podcasting download, we talk about the update to our video editor that we like to use, Magic's Movie Studio 15.
And finally, in this week's Better Podback, we enjoy all the great things you had to tell us over the past week.
Lauren, get the party started. Happy Canada Day.
Welcome to Better Podcasting, a show where we talk about podcast tips, tools, and best practices to help you succeed with your podcast. What makes us different? Well, just like you, we podcast purely out of the love and fun of it. Podcasting is our hobby, and we recognize that it's yours too. We always encourage your questions and feedback, and you can find all of our contact information at betterpodcasting.com. Here's your host for the show, Stephen John Drew and Stargate Pioneer.
Welcome to episode 137 of Better Podcasting. I am Stephen John Drew, and with me, of course, is the American Stargate Pioneer.
Yeah, thank you very much, America. And we'll be talking about America next week. But in the meantime, it's great to be back in the studio. Don't have to worry about echoey sort of audio. Don't have to worry about any sort of backdrop behind me. It's just me, the studio, my normal microphone. This is awesome, and I can't wait to get started.
It's good to be home, isn't it?
It's totally good to be home. You know, Stephen, you've been doing a lot of the travel lately. I had an emergency trip basically last week. It's not going to be the last time we travel for work, but it's hopefully the last time for a while for me.
Well, you know, usually you're used to the emergency trips to the bathroom.
Well, you know, I'm an old man, and you have to go to the bathroom every once in a while. And sometimes, you know, it's an emergency. So there you go.
Well, while we're talking about podcast related stuff, we have a How I Save My Podcast story this week, don't we, SB?
Oh, yeah. So we have this great segment that we start off our podcast for there. How I Save My Podcast Stories. Occasionally we don't have a How I Save My Podcast Story. So we go to the How I Could Have Saved My Podcast Story, where we grab a story from our experiences, maybe from Reddit or something, and we talk about it. Well, that's not the case this week. We don't have a How I Could Have Saved My Podcast Story. Actually, we have some stacked up. But what we have this week is an actual bona fide How I Could Have Saved My Podcast Story. Steven?
Why, yes.
Yes, we do. We do have a How I Saved My Podcast Story. Hi, I'm Editor Steven. You know me from places like... Well, actually, you don't know me, because I am Editor Steven. I'm not Host Steven. No, that's not me. I am Editor Steven. I'm the one that works really hard to make this little rickety-rackety production seem good. I'm the one that slaves hours to get rid of all of those problems that SP and Steven create. And last week, I saved my podcast, Better Podcasting. That's right. Picture this. It was Saturday morning, a slightly groggy but caffeinated editor Steven was sitting there. He had his editing suite pulled up, ready to go. It was all ready to edit. He downloaded the files from MediaFire from SP. He went and grabbed the L12 card, put it into the computer, and started to download the files from Steven. And what happened? He then moved on to get the video file, but there was no video file. Well, there was actually a 30-second video file. And that was a little test Steven did before the show. It seems that host Steven, that idiot, forgot to press record. That's right. Idiot host Steven forgot to actually record the podcast video. Now, usually this wouldn't be a problem, because I would just say, oh yeah, the host Steven, he's an idiot. But I'll just go in and I'll grab the file that's automatically generated from the broadcast, because in XSplit there's an option to go and make it automatically record any streams that go out to the internet. Well, guess what? Apparently, the idiot host even forgot to actually re-enable that after he installed Windows last week because he was having Windows problems. So anyways, yes, the idiot host even didn't hit record, didn't re-enable the backup file, and thus there was no video hot file to be had. Now, here's the thing. Host Steven, he is an idiot. But Editor Steven, he's not only just sexier than Host Steven. He's not better looking. He's not just so dreamy that you can't take your eyes off of Editor Steven. Wait, who are we talking about again? What were we talking about? How dreamy Editor Steven. Oh, sorry. No. We were talking about how Editor Steven had an idea. He just went over to YouTube, downloaded the file. It was just right there. It was ready to go. Sure, the quality was a little less than usual, but I was still able to go ahead and get the file from YouTube, which is why, personally, as a bit of an editor who has to occasionally clean up the mess from Steven and SP, I advocate using a streaming service when you do go out, even if it's just like a private YouTube stream, that you have a backup file, because as soon as you see that going out to YouTube, you know that it's being recorded and you can always go and save your podcast that way. So there you go. That is how I saved Better Podcasting. Back to you, host Steven. Back to you, host SP. And you know what? I don't know that I can take my eyes off of myself. Man, I look good. Okay, back to you guys. Back to you.
Wow, better looking. I don't think so. I think the best looking male editor that I know is John Buchanan. He's way better looking than Editor Steven. I'm just saying. So, of course, we know another editor that's way better looking than anybody, and that's Emily. But, you know, I think John's got you beat for the male part of the species. Anyway, so yeah, how I could have saved my podcast, or how I saved my podcast, I have done that from time to time. Matter of fact, I'm going to have to do that when I'm editing a future Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. just because there was a dropout in me and YouTube, but we'll talk about that later. Anyways, Steven, did Editor Steven talk to you about what happened? Did you hit record this time?
Yeah, I honestly lost track. I was just so busy looking into his eyes. He's so dreamy. So dreamy.
Oh, let you not be in the same room as John Buchanan.
But seriously, though, this is a great story about how even on a very experienced podcast, ones that really pay attention, generally speaking, trying to hit record, they can make mistakes occasionally. And that is when you end up saving your podcast through other methods.
Yep. And if you have a How I Saved My Podcast story, go ahead and get it into us. We would love to tell everybody about your way, about how you saved your podcast. So you can catch us at BetterPod on Twitter. You can catch us on Facebook at facebook.com/BetterPodcasting, or you can catch us on our email, podcast@betterpodcasting.com. If you can give us a video clip, that would be awesome because we're a video show, but we'll take an audio clip. Or if you're just going to give us text, you'll have to deal with the voiceover reading talents of the Stargate Pioneer. In the meantime, we've got a great main topic for you. So Steven, roll the clip.
Is that a clip? Is that what we're calling that now? Is a clip?
Well, technically it's a clip, a bump. It's all kind of the same thing in terms of the video editor and the switcher and stuff like that, right?
Fair enough. Well, hopefully Editor Steven can fix that. But Better Podcasting here. We like to try to keep you informed of the changes in the world of podcasting. And sometimes this actually has to do with podcast players. We've often talked about feature changes and even new apps that have come up occasionally. But today, we're going to talk about some of these, but with the take of how podcast players affect you as a podcaster. Before we do continue, though, we will give you a bit of word of caution. If you're looking for like a step-by-step chart guide of comparison between all of the players, this is not the episode that's gonna help you out there. You just head over to Reddit, ask the question there. Someone will tell you all about that, but no, we're going to give you just a bit of an overview about some of these players, and then again, how that relates to you
as a podcaster. So we should start off with the de facto player, right? That's what we're going to dub this one.
Yeah, we're going to start off with the Apple Podcasts app. And this is the app that Apple has put on all of their phones in iOS, and it's there and you're supposed to use it. It's native. You're supposed to use it. Well, there are other better apps out there, but the biggest point though is that the app is native. So if you have somebody that does not listen to podcasts, it's there. So let's talk about this. It is the standard, and you should make sure that your podcast works well in Apple Podcasts. And why is it the standard? Why we could go through things like the individual ID3 tags. A couple of the key points are that Apple generally uses the iTunes summary field over the description that is in the RSS for the episode. So while it'll fall back to the description, if you're going to use both, you should know that the podcast app users will see the iTunes summary on their app versus the description if the summary is there. Oh, and while we're talking about Apple, we should mention that Apple, of course, ties in with the Apple Podcasts directory. So you should obviously make sure you're including the Apple Podcasts directory. You can enter in your podcast in podcastsconnect.com once you have an iTunes account. And fun fact, many of the other apps that are out there, the other podcast player apps, tie into that directory too. So making sure that you're in the Apple Podcasts app or the iTunes podcast directory, and that will work with other podcast apps as well.
And since we're going to go ahead and start off with the wonderful world of Apple, let's go ahead and just balance that out with Google Podcasts. Well, let's talk about Google Play Podcasts first. Google Play Podcasts is still technically active. This is the podcast directory that is found within Google Play. Fun fact, today, just at work today, I was talking to somebody who I found out listens to podcasts. And what did I find out she listens to podcasts in? In Google Play. She's not a podcaster. She is not a young whippersnapper either. She's just somebody who has Google Play Music, and checks out podcasts through there. So you definitely want to make sure that you're able to be found within Google Play Podcasts at this time, as we record this in June of 2018, because Google Play Podcasts actually runs their own directory. You know how we talked about how people hook into the Apple? No, not at Google. Google goes and runs their own directory. So if you're available to do this, you should try to get yourself in Google Play Podcasts. And why I say if you're available, because unfortunately, you pretty much have to be in the US or Canada to get in there. So if you're not, maybe ask a friend who is in US and Canada to submit it, because it's still a good idea to try to be there. Now, one of the things that you should know about Google Play is that they like to suck. Right, SP?
Yep, they suck your episode right up. That means that you cannot change it once it is uploaded. And if you make a mistake in the production, or you want to take something out after the fact, maybe you want to take an ad out after it's been out there for a while, something like that, you cannot easily do it. Now, you can go through a series of things to make sure that Google Play actually pings for a new episode, but then you might enable the automatic download for some people that are subscribed. So this is an issue with directories like that, and you should be aware of it because it could cause issues with your Google Play users, or there could be a mistake out there that you don't want out there in infinitum. It's not like George Lucas with Star Wars, right? He's, oh, I want the new version out there. And then he puts the new version out there, and the old version is based on some old technology, so it just goes away after a while, or so Lucas thinks. But anyway, that's the issue with Google Play Podcasts.
So let's talk about some, we'll call them small town or upstart players, and what you need to know about those in relation to your podcast. While there are still many, many behemoths when it comes to podcast players, you still get the occasional upstart, the small person that comes in, and you want to be considerate of these sort of podcast players. Now, while these don't always take off, one common thread that seems to be amongst these is that they don't always hook into that Apple Podcast directory right away. I say right away because sometimes they adopt it, but yeah, Plex is a great example of that. Plex still, they're running their own directory. I count down the days until they realize that that's a mistake, but...
Plex, is that the like the PVC pipe, the Plex pipe for plumbing? Is that what you're talking about? Is that the Plex?
Mm-hmm. For sure, that's exactly what it is. Now, the reality is that as hard as you try, you're not going to be able to get yourself into all of these directories right away. You might wait till they sort of take off and get yourself in there, but right away, you might not be able to. So one thing you can think about to try to make it easier for these people is to not hide your RSS feed. Make it easy so that if somebody is trying out one of these new podcast players, the odds are that's going to be one of the first things that they discover is that it doesn't have a directory that is large. So they're going to get used to grabbing the RSS feeds and putting them in. And so if you go and hide your RSS feed, that's going to be next to impossible for this consumer to get in there. They're probably not going to put a ton of work into finding your RSS feed. Fun fact, we actually see this a lot with the applicants on the Gonna Geek Network. It's amazing how many people do on their website hide their RSS feed. So make that a little bit easy. It could just be a big icon on your site. It could be a link in every episode description, or maybe it's just a custom URL that you put in there, like subscribe to Stargate Pioneer's amazing SNASA podcast.space.uk.bc.ab.ca.
Ooh, you ended with CA. You know how difficult that's going to be for me to get a CA? You have to be a Canadian citizen in order to get a CA. I'll have to work on my dual citizenship. Anyway, it will be beneficial to use something like subscribe on Android, as that URL often hooks with a variety of different podcast players, making it simpler for those users. And it's always a good idea to give your show a search in those apps and test if you hear of any chatter around a new player. Your podcast may be automatically pulled into that new player, like we all did with Plex a few weeks ago. You were like, oh, I wonder if our podcast is in there. We were lucky with Better Podcasting, but we were not so lucky with other podcasts on the network, such as The Gonna Geek Show or Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Starling Tribune. So there's no rhyme or reason, and they admitted it, but we hope it's getting better, and maybe we'll have an update on that next week about our shows and whether our shows have appeared there or not. We'll see.
Another experience that you want to consider is SP's favorite one, and the reason why is because, you know, when you're using this one, it's a lot larger screen. It's easier for him to see. He has a lot of hard time now because he's getting older, seeing small things, and we're talking about the desktop or laptop experience. We have to talk about this. If we're going to talk about mobile, we got to talk about the reverse or the converse of this, which is the desktop experience.
Right. So this is the clients like iTunes. Yeah, we actually said that right, because it's not actually Apple Podcasts. It's embedded into the iTunes, which is a desktop application. But where you find probably find people playing your show is via a website. For example, it's embedded audio on a website, maybe a listing on a third-party website, et cetera, et cetera. Web players are getting a little bit better. Matter of fact, I think a lot of people said 2017 was the year of the web player. Maybe it was 2016. I don't know. Web players have evolved over the past couple of years. But overall, they still lack in a lot of ways compared to the mobile players that you have. And because of this, there are some things worth considering. For example, often with a mobile player, if somebody pauses their playback and then goes and does something else, the next time they come back and they open their app, they see exactly where they left off and they can start playing from there. But say you close a tab on your desktop, or God forbid, you do a restart or shut down your computer to save electricity overnight, and then try to find your podcast in the place that you were at. Yeah, that's a little bit harder. So it's probably a good idea early on in your show to remind people of an easy way to get your podcast, even if it's as simple as dropping your domain, like your hobbypodcast.com, then hopefully they'll remember that. And when a few days later, they'll remember, oh, I forgot to finish Steven's paint drying podcast. They can go to your hobbypodcast.com and open Steven's paint drying podcast. But where the web excels is with having quick access to references. Like, say you talk about a new article on a mobile device, you'd have to assume the listener will either open up their browser or the app or click on the link in the show notes. On the web, it's actually right there on the same page, or it should be. And this is why it's a good idea to capitalize on your web presence and make sure your your post that your show is part of, or your show notes, whatever, they're full and legible. But you don't want them to be too crowded so your listener can't find what you're talking about. And you will try to get good format, at least on the web version, so that people can peruse through and easily access the information that they're trying to find in your notes.
Now, some other notable considerations that you might have with podcast players is, well, a couple of features we'll start off with. Number one is a common feature that we're seeing called volume boost or volume level. This is starting to creep into many podcast apps, and many have had this for a while, where it's essentially going to go ahead and level out audio. Now, this isn't a surprise, considering that just last week we told you about how there's an uphill battle trying to get podcasters to use a standard. As well, there's an uphill battle trying to get a standard established. So, of course, podcast players are going to go and try to make it easier for the consumer and bring in this feature. Now, this is important to note for a couple of key reasons. Number one, if your podcast banks on having a dynamic range, you need to know that some of your listeners who are using this feature may not hear that dynamic volume range. If there's something within your show that it's just so important, they might not hear that difference in volume. The second thing comes to what we talked about last week, which is audio quality. If you don't go and get yourself a clean chain and you think, the line noise is hidden enough and I'm running my podcast so low, nobody will really hear it. Well, as soon as that feature comes in and adds a little bit of essentially compression on the consumer side, you can bet they're going to hear that hum or that hiss. So you want to be aware that these are features that some people do use. Another one, which is SP's favorite one in the world of editing, is actually truncate silence is coming to a lot of podcast apps as well.
Right. Now, this is another feature that is coming into a lot of the apps, and it's the ability to truncate the silence for the consumer. On some of the apps, you can turn it on and off. Some of the apps, it's always on. Some of the apps don't have it. But it's important to know this as well, because it can make extremely fast pacing speech harder to look at, to understand. Steven, I'm looking at you, buddy. That fast speech, it's a little bit hard when you're listening with the overcast truncate silence speech on.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, that's fine. I can hear that. It's when you actually say that, you take a breath, and then you start speeding up again. That's, anyway. Another thing to remember is the apps won't always update properly. Update your show properly is what we're talking about. As much as they should, sometimes the apps always don't refresh the static data all the time. For example, both Steven and I have both experienced where show artwork doesn't update in an app until you unsubscribe and then you resubscribe. This is especially of note for people who have launched their podcast and then they put really little effort into their imagery, you know, stick figures or whatever. And they could possibly have people way later on see the old temporary art when they've actually spent some money or spent some time and actually designed new show artwork. And this is something that I have noticed on various different players, various different devices, and various different show. Now, the same caching can happen with things like show descriptions and titles. So, i.e. watch your typo or typos, because sometimes that first generation of notes is going to be there for quite some time.
One other thing that you want to consider with podcast apps is, of course, the ability to download for consumption when you don't have internet access. This is something that you want to consider as a podcaster. Why? Because, well, sometimes people might need to have airplane mode on. They might go camping. They might just, you know, take one of those secret NASA spaceships to Mars like SP is doing next week. So you never know. So streaming obviously ends up equaling bandwidth and needs data. So you want to factor in the people who do, of course, want to download the app.
But if you're going to the moon, by the way, don't worry, because it's going to have Wi-Fi. And yeah, that's actually a thing. Go look it up. But Mars, that's another story. It doesn't have Wi-Fi. Now, we're going to get to the end of our segment here, and we're going to actually talk about the brand new Google Podcast. Yeah, we saved the best for last, and actually, we have a guest who's going to share their experience that they've had, I'm intentionally trying to stay gender free here, over the last like month-ish or so. But first, before we get there, some basics into it, as it's important to note that it uses the description tag over the iTunes summary. But remember back when I was talking about Apple Podcasts? Well, Google Podcasts uses the description tag, not the iTunes summary tag. Gee, I wonder how that is. Maybe it has to do with branding. I think it does. So this could mean that the user or the listener sees the information you intend more for a website rather than your mobile player. And this is actually typical of several different podcasts apps and the behavior therein. So now that we've done all that, Steven, let's roll that clip.
That was some really good pregnant pauses there. Really good. Really good.
Hi, it's Emily from The Story Behind. And I recently switched to Google Podcasts, actually. And not because it's a brand new app, but because I just got a Google Pixel. Like Steven, he and I are Pixel buddies. So I don't know if we want to play the music right now, but we have a theme song.
I have a phone and so do you. Look at that, it's a Pixel 2. That makes us Pixel buddies for life.
Some of the music heard was by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Anyway, when I first got it, I was coming right off of an iPhone. And I've been using iPhone since probably my first smartphone in 2011, I'm going to say. And yeah, it was hard for me to switch, but my husband has an Android. Well, he has a Google Pixel. We basically have all Google stuff in our house. We have the Google Home. We use Chrome all the time. I use Google Docs and Drive for my business. So I'm basically all Google. The only Mac thing in our house was my iPhones. So it just made sense to switch to a Google Pixel. Now, when I did that, it was right when we were still hearing in podcast world about podcasts being available on Android, and you could get a little desktop icon for them if you subscribed. Well, not only could you get the desktop icon for individual shows, and you can maybe have your home screen be everything that you listen to, all the podcast episodes, but there was also something that looks very similar to what we have now, which just said podcast, and it had all your subscriptions right there. So when the quote-unquote new podcast app came out from Google a few weeks ago, it looked the same as it did before. And Steven will tell you, he and I played with it for a bit behind the scenes. We were wondering where it was pulling feeds from because it wasn't Google Play Music. And one of the first things we noticed was when I went to search for Gunna Geek shows, a bunch of feeds popped up, even ones that weren't necessarily supposed to be listed. So that was interesting. And I had to find the right one to subscribe to make sure I was getting the most up-to-date episodes. One of the funny things about this was it automatically was set for streaming podcasts and not downloading them automatically like I had on Apple Podcasts. For me right now, since I work at home and I finally switched to a plan that has unlimited data, it's not that big of a deal for me to stream podcasts that I listen to. I'm also in a part of the country that's close to New York City, and we get streaming services in 4G pretty easily. So if I'm watching a video even and I'm using data, it's not that choppy for me. But a lot of people don't have that. So they want that ability to manually download or have it automatically download. But I am doing what Lipson calls a progressive download, meaning I'm streaming. And by streaming, it means I'm progressively downloading that podcast to listen to. I have seen a lot of people complain about Google Podcasts not having playlists, and it didn't really affect me because I had playlists on Apple Podcasts, but I ended up not really using them because sometimes I'm not necessarily in the mood to listen to every podcast there is about podcasting all on the same day. I like to kind of split it up throughout the week. So playlists, not having that, it wasn't a big deal for me. But one thing I did miss was the queue. I was able in Apple Podcasts to create a queue of what I wanted to listen to on a drive. Now, when I had that long commute, it was great. I would sit in my driveway before I left and make sure I had all the shows I wanted downloaded to my phone and also put in that queue of what order I wanted to listen to them. Now I don't have that as much, but honestly, my drives aren't that far anyway, so I can usually get through a podcast or two, and it's easy enough for me to just hit the one I want to listen to. Another downside is the show notes that I've noticed. Now, before, unless I'm mistaken, before the actual Google Podcast app, the original podcast shortcut that was on my home screen, when I clicked on it and I went to an episode and I listened to it, there were links in it that were able to be clicked. Now, if people set up their RSS feed to have certain words hyperlinked, meaning you could write something like go to my Twitter and that text could be linked so that when somebody clicks it, it automatically takes them to your Twitter. That doesn't work anymore in this one. What happens though is if you add an actual URL, so something that ends in .com or .net, that is weirdly clickable. But since in my show notes for my show and for other shows I know of, they'll hyperlink text. So it's not a jumble of, oh, go to this website, which is www.whateverwebsite.com/417. It's all ugly and stuff. But if you put those in your notes, Google Podcasts will make that a link. So it's something to consider as a podcaster when you're talking about links found in your show notes, or if you refer to a lot of things, or even if you're using your show notes as part of your affiliate sales. So I sound like I'm kind of complaining about this app, but the one thing I really like about it is that it's using the Google algorithm, and Google knows me so well at this point. I mean, Google's like my BFF. We're like this. It knows me. It knows what I like. And as soon as I started putting subscriptions into the new podcast app, it knew what kind of podcasts I like. So on Apple Podcasts, when you open up the home screen, it would probably bring you featured or what's new or new and noteworthy. But on this one, it doesn't do that. It really curates the homepage to say, oh, we see that you like this podcast. Here are other podcasts that people who subscribe to that podcast listen to. Or what they did in the case of Dave Jackson, it saw that I was subscribed to two shows by Dave Jackson, and it had a whole list of other shows by him saying top podcasts by Dave Jackson for me to look through. And it knows the categories and even the subcategories. So it knows that I like society and culture, and it knows that I like the subcategory of history in there. So that's why I kind of like Google Podcasts at this point. I just need a simple player. One thing I do really like about it is I'm from the Northeast, so I like to listen to podcasts a little bit faster because if you can't tell, I talk faster than other parts of the country. So I like to speed up my podcast, and I do like the speed on this podcast app because it goes by 0.1 increments as opposed to Apple Podcasts or Overcast, which are either 0.25 increments or 0.5 increments. So it's not, you have to jump from regular speed to 1.5 speed and nothing in between like an Apple Podcast, or one speed to 1.25 speed like an Overcast. I can really adjust it to get it exactly how I want. I think it's going to improve. I have high hopes for it because it's Google. They'll be going to Podcast Movement, so they'll be able to talk to other podcasters as well as podcast listeners to find out what they really need to do with this app. So I'm excited about it. And again, going back to the curation, I like Netflix. A lot of people like Netflix and they know Netflix. And the one thing that Netflix is really great at is recommending shows to you based on other shows you've watched. It does a really good job. It's how it knew that when I was watching The Office and hey, it noticed that I binge watched The Office a lot, it knew to recommend Parks and Recreation for me and I got into that show. It also knows that I'm not a huge stand-up comedy fan, but I do like certain comics like John Mulaney. So whenever a new John Mulaney special comes out, Netflix knows to show it to me first. So I'm thinking that's what this Google Podcast app is going to do. And it's going to get a really good algorithm and know you well enough to be able to suggest to you new podcasts. So hopefully that'll make podcasts grow and podcast listenership grow. So yeah. That's my little spiel about Google Podcasts. Bye, everyone. Sorry I couldn't be here tonight, but believe it or not, I'm fighting a cold. Bye.
I have a phone and so do you. Look at that. It's a Pixel 2. That makes us Pixel Buddies for life.
So yes, thank you very much to the one and only Emily Prokop for sending that in. #PixelBuddies. We love that jingle so much. We use that a lot on the GonnaGeek.com show. And of course, we're going to try to fit that in here somewhere. But seriously, Emily, we really appreciate you taking the time to record that. Fun fact, little inside baseball. Emily was supposed to be on the show today with us, but she became so sick today. That was like 20 minutes after a shower so that she could actually record that. So we really appreciate you doing that, Emily. We hope you're better soon, and we'll have to have you on for another episode because it's always great having you on the show. Just, you know, we might not have you back on with Jason at the same time, you know.
Yeah, so when Emily comes on, is that a de facto episode? Better podcasting, or is that just better podcasting with guest Emily Prokop?
It's obviously better podcasting featuring Emily Prokop.
I see. So I have a couple of notes, by the way, about the Google Podcast app, because I actually have an original Motorola Droid phone. I have no idea what version of Android it's actually running, but suffice it to say it's the original. And suffice it to say, I downloaded or tried to download the Google Podcast app, and it told me this device does not support this app. So, yeah, can't get Google Podcasts on the original Android. Now, I do have another Android, the Note 3, and I booted that sucker up, went in to the search bar, search for better podcasting, and it was just like the normal web search. It wasn't the special search that has come out. So then I went to download the podcast app. And it let me download the podcast app. But then it said, you can't use this app without downloading the Google app. So I'm like, oh, I wonder how long this is going to take. So I downloaded the Google app. It was about 44 megs, so it wasn't a big download. The update took a little while. But after the update took place, I could use Google Podcasts and running Android 5.0. I have no idea what version of search it is, but I could use the search bar the same way, threw in better podcasting, and boom! We had the Better Podcasting show up on it. So yeah, even with a device as old as a Note 3, but not the original Droid, you can download and use the Google Podcasts app. That's pretty cool.
That is amazing. And I know you just did this, and I got to say that it's really great information. I would not have guessed that right at all. I would have thought for sure they would have discontinued that a long time after that generation. So that's fantastic. Really, really cool. And Emily, again, thank you for sending that. We know there's been a lot of people who have been talking about the Google Podcast app. And honestly, I think a lot of people who don't know a lot about Android. And I know that you have even educated me on the way that this integrated since you first came over to Pixel. Because again, as she said, pretty much what you see with Google Podcast app is nearly the same experience as what you were seeing in the Google search section. So I think you're very qualified to talk about this. And I think that if anybody has questions, go find Emily Prokop, Story Behind Podcast, and ask her. Hopefully she'll get you back or we'll get back to you. So
she will. I do have one final update from last week. I mentioned that Voices of Defiance, which was a podcast that I did, my first podcast, it was not indexed in the Google search. Well, guess what? The change in the URL went through voicesofdefiance.com. Now it points to the Libsyn page, at least temporarily. The podcast URL was indexed. What I'm going to try to do now is I'm going to move the pointer, the forward, back to the website. I'm going to see if the Voices of Defiance RSS feed remains indexed or if it's taken away, because I know that the site that I have Voices of Defiance pointed to is not compliant with the Google search terms. So we will see if it actually disappears or if it stays.
Welcome to this week's Better Podcasting Download.
All right, it's time for the Better Podcasting Download, and this week we're going to be giving a update about our favorite audio and video editor here on Better Podcasting, Magix Movie Studio. As you may or may not know, SP and I both have been using Magix Movie Studio for a while. The reason why is because we feel it's a very versatile editor, especially at a consumer price tag. It features a lot of the pro-level features that you see in things like Vegas Pro, at a consumer level. Now, before we continue, I will let you know this is Magix, M-A-G-I-X, Vegas Movie Studio. If you look up Magix Movie Edit, it's a different piece of software. Make sure you're looking at the Vegas side of things for Magix software, because Magix a while ago bought the Vegas Creative Suite from Sony.
And the specific version that I use is Movie Studio Platinum 15. I think, Steven, you have the version higher than that?
Yes. There's a couple different versions, but the top tier versions, the actual editor, both run off of the Platinum editor. So that's a really good feature to have because, the Platinum is the top tier of the suite, but it's available at the mid-tier price. The big difference is that there's one tier higher that it has a suite available that comes with a variety of tools. And that brings me to my first point that I'm just going to mention here right away, which is that 15 for you podcasters started to include the RX elements in there. So it's a bonus that you get when you do buy the Magix Movie Studio 15 bundle. The top tier one is you do get the iZotope RX Elements suite. So, well, I call it a suite, but it's a bundle. Now, recently, when they did do the upgrade to 15, we wanted to check this out because we had been using 14 for quite a while. And I've been using 15 for a couple months now and SP for a few weeks now. So we think we're ready to talk about this. So some of the general differences that are with Magix Movie Studio. Well, first off, it's visual. The visual appearance has changed with Magix Movie Studio 15. Now, while I will say that Magix Movie Studio 14 was miles ahead of Vegas Pro 14, it looked a lot more modern than Vegas Pro, it still seemed dated in a lot of ways. Well, they have revised the interface to be more modern. It's partially a skin change, but they've also changed some of the interaction functions. For example, before you used to have a lot of different buttons on every individual track. Well, now they've really adopted the three dots menu. So you know how we all see like the hamburger menu and whatnot? Yeah, they've done that where you now have the essentially a sub menu that you can go in and actually see the individual components there. They've changed the way that certain removable and dockable windows can be pulled out of the actual software. Before, you used to have to go find the specific section that you would hold on to and grab. Well, now they've changed it so that you're just going and grabbing the title bar, for example, from the video preview window. This is a lot more modern. It's a lot more straightforward and a lot more intuitive. They've also added a quick start feature, which should make this more in line with some of the consumer editors that are available. So people who do want to edit a little bit more simply, it's going to be a little easier out of the box. And they've also changed some things with the compatibility of different video platforms. For example, what's that device that's available on Apple? Oh, iPhone. That's right. The iPhone. The iPhone video standard before kind of sort of worked with Magix Movie Studio, but you really needed QuickTime involved. Well, now they've gone and they've made it so that it does work natively within the app. This is actually very helpful because back when I did that promo video for the Guinea Geek show back in December, I had video sent to me from a iPhone and I had to go and convert it first in order to work without using QuickTime. So it's nice to see this built-in compatibility. And one of the most exciting changes from an editing perspective is this tool that they've added called Event Healing. Now, if you've ever worked in a multi-track editor before, you've probably gone and spliced up a track only to a little bit later realize that, hey, I don't actually need to have that track spliced. So you either had the option of doing edit undo or just leaving it sliced. Well, here's the thing, is that edit undo doesn't always work so good when you've gone and done a bunch of things in between the time that it took you to notice that you sliced that when you didn't need to. Well, this event healing essentially is going to allow you to merge the two clips back together. And I've used this quite a bit. So that's something that I like to when I edit multi-track audio. I like to try to keep them as much together as possible so it limits the chance of getting out of sync. So when I do end up accidentally slicing SP's track and realizing, hey, wait a minute, that was just my gut reaction wanting to silence SP. He was supposed to be there. I can just go ahead and merge the two back using this event healing tool. And the biggest change in Movie Studio 15, which is far overdue and very happy to see, is it's supporting more modern hardware encoders. Now, if you're not familiar with it, with the way that hardware and software encoders work, is essentially when you save a video, there's a possibility of using your actual processor to save the video, to basically bring that video together, to compile it. There's also hardware encoders available. For example, video cards have a way that they can do that compiling through itself. And fun fact, also, a lot of modern Intel processors have built in a video encoder as well, hardware encoder. These are both now available to be used within Magic's Movie Studio 15. There was hardware encoding available in 14. However, it didn't really cover the modern technology. So let's talk about some pros that I found with Magic's Movie Studio 15. Well, overall, I found it to be a lot more stable in editing. I found that during my experience that when I used to stack up a lot of different audio tracks, that sometimes it would get a lot less stable. I've noticed it to be less so with 15. So overall, the editing is a little bit more stable. The rendering times that I've found, it's about a 10 to 15% increase or decrease in rendering times. So it's speeded up rendering, making it faster. Now, I should preface this. I have a dated video card. I have a NVIDIA GTX 660. If you know anything about video cards, you know that that is older. Apparently, this is a lot faster. A lot of people are putting high benchmarks with higher cards, like the one that SP has, the 1060.
And in my laptop, which is where I started to use 15, it has a GTX 1050 in it, and it worked just fine with that. So I'm very happy with the rendering time of it. Now, I will say that Steven has experienced more stability over 14. I've experienced a little less stability, but I don't have the most current build, so I need to actually update to the most current build.
And finally, in my pro section, what I'm going to mention is that there's better support with the 4K videos. Now, what I mean by that is there's an ability now to go in and enable so that it creates proxy files when you bring in 4K video. And as a couple of 4K drone users, this might be important for us because when you have a 4K file, it's very, very large. So what ends up happening is you pull it in and it has trouble essentially showing you in real time what's going on. It's very, very slow because 4K is a lot of video. So what happens when you create a proxy file is it essentially re-renders that file on the fly so that it makes a smaller version of it. So you're editing, seeing the smaller version, but when it actually saves, it's saving the full quality. This is something that you can turn on by default. And if you're doing a lot of 4K footage, it's going to be helpful for you. Now, if you're not doing a lot of 4K footage and you don't really need to do a lot of edits, it's probably more time consuming because when you do pull in that 4K file, it takes a little bit to make that file. But for people who do edit a lot, it's definitely what they need. Now, getting to the con side of things, let's start with one of the more basic cons. It's a niche one, but it's worth mentioning. If you've ever used an image sequence is essentially a video that is saved as a bunch of individual files. This can be useful for some people who want to do transparent video without having to bank on Apple technology. QuickTime is one of the only ones that does transparent video. So what happens when you do an image sequence is essentially it's making all of these individual frames in images. And because we all know things like PNGs are transparent, you can bring it in and have a transparent video on your in your editor. And I've used this. I use this for the Gonna Geek Show. I use it occasionally for here. Well, unfortunately, there's a bit of a bug that I discovered and actually reported, which is the fact that when you pull in an image sequence, the rendering time goes through the roof in 15. Confirmed in 14 that it doesn't do it. Confirmed in Pro, it doesn't do it. And I posted on the Magic's Movie Studio group, the forum, and other people confirmed the exact same results. So there is a ticket in there. Hopefully that'll get fixed eventually. But if you use an image sequence, it could be a showstopper for you. For my, for example, I use image sequences actually for my drone videos. I edit those in Vegas Pro because the rendering time is just abysmal with image sequences in Magic's Movie Studio. Another thing that might come up for you is they changed one of the rendering agents. And what I mean by that is essentially the software that's running to show you as you edit what's happening. They updated it, they refresh it for better technology. And unfortunately for those of us with older video cards, it really caused problems out of the box. There's something that's called the SO4 compounder, I believe it is. And it's just essentially the way that it's rendering that video on the fly. And I had to go and re-enable that SO4 because that was how it used to run. And with the new version, it was just super choppy. If I wanted to preview in real time, it was just really, really choppy and hard for me to see. Now, there's instructions out there. If you have 15 and you're having this problem, email me. I'll let you know. I'll send you the link how to do it. Really easy to turn back on to the old one. But it is something worth noting out of the box. As well, with the hardware encoding, for me, when I've done the actual NVIDIA ENC, the NVIDIA video encoding, every 59 frames, there's a bit of a stutter. Now, that could be compatibility with my video card. It could be a bug. But what you see is it essentially does 59 frames, hangs for a second, does 59 more frames, hangs for a second. It's not the software hanging, it's just the rendering. And again, that could just be the nature of my encoder. That might just be the way that it works. But it would save me a lot more time if it wasn't doing that. And finally, the last con that I'll have before I turn it over to SP for a couple of his cons is I will say that the render experience for me has been less stable than 14. When I go to go render as, where I go and I select what output I want to put this as, what I've been finding is that sometimes it does crash. Again, there's bugs reported for this. The software is new, but that is something that I've had it crash several times on that when I never did on 14. SP, what's your experience been so far?
Well, I'll counter one of your points by saying I have not had the 59 frames stuttering like you have. I will make sure that I will check that next time I render something, but I haven't had that issue. So it could be machine related. It could be build related because you're using a better build than I am or a more recent build than I am. So I don't know. And then also, one of the things that I dislike in that the menus, you have to actually have to double click into the effects portion of the tracks. And since I go into each track and I use a different effects chain for each track, I actually have to go in there and change that. Even if I duplicate the track and basically copy the effects from one to another, I still have to go in there. So I'm a little annoyed by that, having to double click into it. But hey, I only have to do it once and then it's set and then I don't have to worry about it again. And also, one of the things that I do love, getting back to the pros about this, is you can edit on the fly. Like in Audacity, you actually have to stop. You had to make your edit and you have to continue. In Movie Studio, you can, in the Platinum version 15 and 14 that I've used, you can actually go in there and make the edit and it will continue to play or preview as it goes on. So you don't have to stop and not continue with the playback as you're editing. So if you edit like I do, front to back, and I don't use edit points like Steven does, that is a major plus. So it is a great editing platform to use in my book.
Absolutely. Overall, we're still both very happy with Magix Movie Studio. I think we're both in agreement that we're hoping that a little bit more time, some of these quirks that came out with 15 will be solved, because I think 14, when you look at both sides of it, I think that 14, if you weigh it, it's really just a little bit more stable, because even though my editing experience is more stable, if I'm having to fight to render, that's a problem, right? So I think that overall, 14 is a little bit more stable, but they have done a lot of bug fixes. And if you're going to buy it and you're willing to deal with a couple of these things, I would definitely say just go right into 15, because it's more modern, it's more fresh, and you know it's going to be supported longer. I haven't reinstalled 14 since I reinstalled my computer, and I don't think I will. It's working good enough for me at this point.
Yeah, for the price, again, this is a no-brainer. If you're going to do any video editing at all, this is it. And if you want to go to a more professional audio style editor, this is it as well. You don't have to edit video in it. You can just edit audio. You can export it as a FLAC. You can export it as a WAV. You can export it as an MP3. So you're good with Movie Studio.
So if you have any questions about Movie Studio, do let us know. Write us in the comments, send us an email, whatever it is. We'll absolutely let you know, because SP and I both use it quite regularly. So let's go ahead and get to the Better Pod Back. Here we go.
It was a fun week on the Twitter sphere dealing with the Better Pod Twitter account. So started off with at Story Behind Pod on June 23rd. Yes, that's Emily, who was just on the show earlier. I was trying to wear all my shirts today, but I didn't realize I had this many. Hashtag podcast t-shirt day. And one of the shirts that we had designed for Libsyn's The Feed was actually part of that pile. But wait, that's good. But wait, there's more. So then Emily on at Story Behind Twitter, she posted The Feed at Libsyn, designed by Better Podcasting, at Better Pod, hashtag podcast t-shirt day. And she actually wore her hashtag GGTOTDTY t-shirt that we had made up for The Feed. And it was part of her using each individual podcast t-shirt she had with a little message. And I'm not going to spoil the message. You got to go to her Twitter account and see all of the pictures and all of the little play cards she had with the little thing that she had. But wait, no, it doesn't end there. It gets better. So Elsie Escobar at the Elsie Escobar, she retweeted the Libsyn account, which she runs too. I mean, she's a social media consultant, runner, whatever, for happiness expert, I believe she calls herself, for Libsyn. And anyway, in her tweet, she said, "Hey, it's hashtag podcast t-shirt day. This is a very special t-shirt that At Better Pod made for my podcast, hashtag The Feed. Total inside joke and amazing." And it is a picture of her wearing the t-shirt. So once again, it's great. So go ahead and go to at the Elsie Escobar's from June 23rd Twitter account or at Libsyn, and you will see all this great stuff. So that was kind of fun, Stephen, wasn't it, over the weekend?
Yeah, and when you don't know what we mean when we say hashtag GGTOTDTY, yes, you don't know, unless you listen to Libsyn's The Feed, and that's the inside joke. So we made some t-shirts for some inside jokes. So we like to have fun occasionally. We also had Aureliapod, say it with me,
Aureliapod,
say, "Since the topic of loudness levels was brought up, and making sure listeners aren't blown away going from one show to another, I got a bit of a laugh because in our release days, I listened to you guys before as a bit of an ear benchmark for our own levels. Good to know." And that's exactly why this episode was released super quiet, just to throw you off and make you wreck your episode. That's why.
Well, it doesn't matter, because at Better Pod actually replied to Aurelia Pod and said, "Hey, you should check out the leveler Orban loudness meter." It's not a leveler, it's a meter. And you can actually see what your loudness levels are, your perceived loudness levels, those loose numbers we were talking about last week. You can actually check that out and analyze your own file on your own. At the Covert Nerd, he tweeted us and he said, "Is there a noticeable difference in sound quality on the ATR2100 mic when using XLR and USB? To which I said, "Well, go check out this video and see for yourself." He said, "Will do, sir." And it was actually the Knox comparison video that I did. Remember the Knox podcasting microphone that's not available anymore? Yeah.
RIP Blob. I'm sorry, wrong RIP. My apologies.
RIP Knox. So Knox actually, Blab outlasted Knox in terms of time. But anyway, so the microphone comparison did include USB only. It did include XLR, and it included the compression of both as well. It was actually an extensive audio test. So if you want to know what the ATR2100 or the AT2005 sound like, USB and XLR, you can go to our Gonna Geek YouTube channel and you can search for Knox podcast microphone and that will show up and you can tell the difference. So he said, "Thank you very much, sir," and went on his way.
And if you go to geeks.link/Knox, it'll take you to your Knox, to the Knox review.
Geeks.link/Knox. So we also had a tweet from at Varmints Podcast, and he said, TMW, which, by the way, if you don't know, BT Dubs, if you don't know what that means, it's that moment when. So TMW, when I'm pretty sure I'm doing everything at Stephen John Drew and at Stargate Pioneer are telling me to do with my audio on at Better Pod. And that was great. So congratulations. I said, "Thank you very much for listening." And at Varmints Podcast tweeted us back and he said, "Thank you very much for the podcast. I wish it existed about 2 years ago when I started mine. I'm not an audio guy, so everything was learned through trial and error, mostly error. Welcome to the club, by the way. Still trying to figure it out, but I think I have a system that works." So that's pretty cool. Stephen, when did we start this podcast? I mean, it's 2018 right now. When did we, what was it?
October, I don't know.
October 20.
It feels like it's been like 30 years podcasting with you. So I don't remember.
So yeah, at at Varmint's podcast, we actually started 2 years ago. But, you know, we were small time at that point in time. Now we're major. I mean, everybody knows about Better Podcasting now.
I will not agree with that statement. We also had on the world of Facebook, we posted a poll and we asked this question. Are you happy with your podcast consumption app? Now, I'm going to pause here for a moment to let the suspense go, because the responses was 100% yes. There was nobody that said no. Everybody that responded, which is not surprising because we really like our Facebook is tailored towards podcasters. So, of course, they're going to be more willing to experiment with apps. So there you go. That means all of the world, because of our sample size, it reflects all the world. All of the world is happy with their apps.
At least all the world that replied to our poll.
For sure. But that's going to take us to another end of a Better Podcasting episode. Before we wrap up, we'll remind you that we're part of the Gunna Geek Network. The Gunna Geek Network has a lot of really amazing geeky podcasts. If you've not checked it out, please check out the Gunna Geek Network at GunnaGeekNetwork.com, including Digital Soup. In episode 80 of Digital Soup, the guys discuss Facebook Messenger automatically playing ads, Mario Brothers, and Jason surprises with a reverse quiz show. So if you want to have a little bit of geeky fun, check out that at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. SP, is there any closing words? Would you like to thank Emily Prokop again?
I would indeed. Thank you very much, Emily, for suffering through your cold and taking a shower to clear your sinuses before you did that, and all the wonderful editing to take out your sneezes and stuff like that. So thank you very much for suffering through it. Actually, that's kind of a How I Saved My Podcast story right there. So thank you very much, Emily. You are awesome. You're always awesome, and you're always welcome on Better Podcasting. And we're not going to talk about Better Podcasting right now.
So for episode number 137 of Better Podcasting, I'm host Steven.
I'm editor Steven.
And I'm host Steven again.
And I'm Stargate Pioneer saying happy birthday, Canada. See you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Better Podcasting. We want to hear from you. You can find all of our contact information at betterpodcasting.com. If you like the show, please consider giving us a 5-star review in iTunes. We encourage you to check out all of the other geeky podcasts available at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. This has been a Gunna Geek production. Thanks for listening, and we will see you again next week.